This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome
to My Favorite Murder,
the mini-sode.
This is the mini-sode, like Karen said.
It's your emails. You've sent them into the Gmail. Yeah. We read them to you. Everyone wins.
That's right. Should I go first?
Yeah, do it.
All right. I'm not going to read you the title of this one. Hi. Hello. How's it going? Great? That's wonderful. Not so great? Treat yourself to a nice meal. You deserve it.
Taken care of.
Yeah. Then it says, my cats, Mocha and Cinnamon, also say hello to Mimi, Dottie, and Mo. Thank you. Eeny, meeny, Dottie, Mo. Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to try to be as anonymous and brief as possible because the drug underworld is a super scary place. But this is my favorite weird and also not funny, but funny, but also interesting party story that I tell everyone when I feel awkward and I want to share it with you. That's exactly what hometowns are about.
Entirely.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving you conversation starters for the next month.
That's right. And we want to hear your conversation starters as well. If you're going to take one, you have to give one, essentially, yep. Like a penny.
Yeah.
Some years ago, when I was 19, I returned home from college for the summer. And thank God I did, because I will take San Diego dry summer heat over Boston's sweaty ball sack humidity of hell.
Wow.
Thank you for making me say that. During one of my grocery trips with my ama, we were listening to Narcocorrido on the radio. A narcocorrido is a subgenre of corrido, aka a narrative ballad popular in Mexico that focuses on illegal activities, aka drugs, and not the good kind. I'm sure I said that so poorly and I apologize profusely. I grew up listening to this and other Latino music, so I never paid attention to the lyrics until I heard my last name in the song. Now, my last name is very unique in the U.S., as in there's not even a handful of people that have my last name. So I turned and asked my lovely ama, is my last name common in Mexico? But in Spanish, you know. And on our way to Wally World, of all places, she says to me, oh, that's your great uncle. Insert me looking confused in Spanish.
Okay.
After more probing and getting nothing out of my ama, I decided to do some research and discovered that this man was not only an infamous cartel, but also worked side by side with El Chapo.
Ooh.
He was even a reoccurring character in Netflix's Narco, Mexico season 1-3, in case you were curious.
Narcos. I haven't watched Narcos because any show about either mafia, cartel, whatever, It to me, there's so much violence.
Yes.
And then there's very rarely any kind of like, you know,
yeah,
good romance or anything else that's going to kind of keep you there. But I've always heard Narcos is awesome.
Yeah, let's pick that up. He is also dead, supposedly. And to my greatest relief, my family distanced themselves from him the moment he got into crime. I was also the last one to find out, and I'm pretty sure it's because I was the baby of the family. As I mentioned previously, I consider this my party story. I also consider this my, I don't know if you want to get involved with me, man. My family has a history, so leave me the alone, you fucking creep story. I have a sister who listens to you guys. Hi, Melly. And she hates talking about this while I just yap about it freely to anyone, like I have 9 lives instead of 1. Anyways, thanks for reading. Stay sexy and tell everyone your dark family secret when it's an interesting but also concerning story. B-E-A.
B. First of all, what a great name.
So good.
Old school. And also, yes, so true. How bizarre would it be? You're listening to a song on the radio and then it's suddenly like, your Uncle John.
Yeah. Your Uncle John Kilgariff. And you're like, wait, is that a common name?
Wait, it's like, he was an electrician, one of the greats.
But guess what? He was also in Narcos.
He was a character on Narcos.
Guess what? Like,
that's intense. That's amazing.
The legend of John Kilgariff.
Oh, you know, just to update, my Uncle John was not in the cartel in any way. He was a great man. Rest in peace, Uncle John. Truly one of the funniest people I've ever known in my life.
Love it.
The best was, so he got tongue cancer and he had to come down here because there was a doctor in Southern California that had like a, there was like a specialist for the thing that he had.
Yeah.
And so my dad came down with him and like stayed with him while he was getting these treatments just so he wouldn't be by himself. So I went out to meet them to go out to dinner with my, and my cousin Pete. And we were there and I walked in, I'm like, Uncle John, how do you feel? And he goes, I'm dying. He just like screamed it in the middle of this Italian restaurant.
You know, I didn't know you had a an Uncle John Kilgariff, and I just totally fucking made a name up and got Uncle John Kilgariff right.
Oh yeah, well, I said Uncle John first, so yeah, that's why I said it.
And I went with it. Okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Do you just felt the power of improv?
I did, because Uncle John was so fucking funny. Yeah. Thanks, Uncle John.
He taught us all. Okay. This says, the subject line is babysitting hometown. And then it just starts in all caps. Guys, my sister will lose her mind if you read this on the show. Please read it. You won't regret it. My sister Christina got me hooked on your podcast, and this story is about her. We're both in our late 20s now, but this story happened when we were 19 and 21. So she was a nanny for a couple for a while in her early college years. One Friday when she received her paycheck, she realized that it was a bit short. No big deal, of course. She knew it was a simple mistake that the parents would fix. She messaged them in a group chat, politely letting them know that her paycheck was short. They apologized profusely, feeling embarrassed that they had made the mistake. She assured them it was no big deal and that they could give it to her on Monday. Fast forward to the weekend, my sister is drunk on stage at a restaurant singing karaoke.
Oh, no.
And then in parentheses, it says, she's actually a really good singer too. Oh. She had, for no specific reason, chosen the song, Bitch Better Have My Money by Rihanna. It's not no specific reason. It's subconscious, basically. Yeah. And also that song rules, as we all know. When they got the bill and asked for the to-go boxes, the waitress took the food back and placed it in a box herself, marking the outside with the song that the person had sang on stage to keep straight whose food was whose. Monday morning rolls around and my probably hungover 21-year-old sister grabs her to-go box of leftovers as her lunch for that day. She shows up to her nanny job, pops it in the fridge, and she's getting the kids settled as the parents are heading for work. The dad opens the fridge to grab his lunch and sees the box that says, Bitch, better have my money, written in bold letters.
No.
Yeah. Shocked and pissed off, this man looks at my sister and says, my wife will have your money to you this evening. Completely oblivious, my sister replies, okay, no problem. And he leaves for work. As lunchtime rolls around and she reaches into the fridge, she internally dies of embarrassment as she realizes her mistake. The dad thought she had written, Bitch, better have my money on her lunch as a message to his wife. She attempted to apologize through another group text to the couple that was reluctantly accepted. She didn't work for them much longer after that.
God.
Anyway, I hope you had a good laugh. This is my favorite story to tell about her. Thanks for all you do. Sincerely, Ileana, she, her.
That's another great name.
Ileana's a good one.
Oh my God, that is cringy and I love it.
It's so embarrassing. And how, if you were that father, how psychotically passive aggressive would you, you're just like, they're threatening me just in case I see her food container.
Yeah.
Like how insane. You would get scared if
it's
that
like
person was in your house.
Weird message that's like inappropriate. And oh my God, I love
and then
it.
You're just leaving your kids alone in the house with that person.
You have to, because you have to go to work. Oh my God, please send awkward misunderstandings. We need those.
I would love to know what Christina's like in real life, where it's just like, was it a total like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, where suddenly it's just like that really nice girl.
I need awkward misunderstandings. Please send them to myfavoritemurder@gmail.com.
Georgia, I just need to ask you kind of a general question. Who among us hasn't stumbled across a 5-ingredient dinner recipe or like a power washing tutorial online and thought, I want to try that.
I know I have, but usually I just bookmark and keep scrolling. It's hard to tell what content online is legit, Karen.
Well, Georgia, fortunately, MasterClass knows a pro from a foe. They only work with experts so you can learn with confidence.
With 200 classes taught by the world's best instructors on topics like cooking, photography, writing, and more, MasterClass has something for everyone.
Once you sign up for their annual membership, you'll have unlimited access to their full catalog for just $10 a month.
Get to know yourself better with RuPaul's Self-Expression and Authenticity class, or learn about problem solving from the science guy himself, Bill Nye.
MasterClass was designed to enhance your life no matter how busy you are. Their sessions are made up of 10 to 15 minute video lessons that can be taken in any order so you can learn at your own pace.
I love it. When you sign into MasterClass, it's like the whole world opens up and you can be in there for hours just learning stuff. I learned about dog training. You can do an improv lessons with Amy Poehler.
Oh, there's the great relationship expert Esther Perel. You can get in there and learn how to build deeper connections with her.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/MFM.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/MFM.
Masterclass.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
I'm not going to read you the subject line of this one. Hello, murder fam. I think you all are great, and I appreciate your openness in talking about mental health, medication, addiction, etc. But for real, let's get into it. 6 years ago, my mom died from pancreatic cancer, and after a difficult divorce that left just me and my dad to celebrate holidays together, so I try to make them special. My dad grew up in rural Michigan where it snows, so I wanted to take him somewhere it snows. Mistake number one, I thought it would be fun to see the dogs, puppy included, experience snow and get some time outside. Mistake number two. So on Christmas Day, my dad and I set out with my puppy, Nelson, and my 13-year-old Australian shepherd, Pebbles, to walk along a pretty tame portion of the Pacific Crest Trail. I turned off the main road and instantly hit slushy, icy mud. I knew I needed to put the chains on because it was only going to snow more and more and get harder to drive. Now, you should know I don't drive to the trailhead in all my gear. Hiking boots, warm jacket. The car is warm, and so I can put all that stuff on at the trailhead. Same thing goes for my dad. So I lay out the chains for the tires, and I'm no expert here, so I'm trying to line up my tires with the chains, and my dad steps out to help. We leave the car running with the hot air so the car doesn't get too cold. You already know what's going to happen, right?
I think so.
Just as I step back to the car to drive over the chains, my 40-pound puppy Nelson looks me dead ass in the eyes and steps on the lock button. The car keys are in the ignition. The car is running and I have no phone, and my dad and I are locked outside the car effectively in t-shirts and slip-on shoes.
Oh, shit.
In a snowstorm.
Oh, God.
We're on a lightly trafficked dirt road on Christmas Day, and virtually no cars are coming and going. My dad's on blood thinners, and I'm worried about him getting cold. And Nelson isn't quite reliable with the potty training, so I'm worried about the mess we'll come back to. I feel like that's the least of your problems, because you're about to fucking die of hypothermia.
Yeah, but don't forget that she left the heater on in the car. So whatever mess happens is going to be multiplied by 50.
Oh, God. Finally, a car passes us and offers us a blanket. After about another 10 minutes, another car sees us and offers to call AAA. They warned me it would be expensive, but at this point, I'd offer them Nelson in exchange for getting in the car. Mm-hmm. Another guy lets us get warm in his pickup truck while we wait for AAA. All these people, total strangers, might have saved our lives. We easily could have died from exposure in a few hours. The AAA guys come and pop the door open in a second. Nelson wasn't the least bit remorseful for nearly killing me or my dad. I haven't left Nelson alone in a running car again. However, that's one mistake you make once. Mm-hmm. Stay sexy and don't leave your keys in the car alone with your dog, Lauren.
Also, how about stay sexy and don't, just because your dad grew up where there was snow doesn't mean you know how to deal with snow or drive in
right.
it or handle it.
Right. I think another thing too is always put your cell phone in your pocket when you get out of the car, no matter how quickly you're getting out of the car, right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, God.
Just always prepare for the worst.
Just stay home. Just fucking stay home.
Just stay home. Well, also because it's making me think, did they say the Angeles Crest Forest?
The Pacific, I think it was the Pacific Crest. The Pacific.
Oh, okay. I was assuming it was literally like up the five or something.
Oh, no, no. I think this is in like actual snowy cold.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, that it's also very beautiful that those people helped, because I wonder how much it influenced the people to help people on Christmas Day.
Yeah. Oh, they loved it.
You know what I mean?
It is also sad. Like, these people are trying to do this lovely thing because the mom died. This person got a Lauren got a divorce. They're trying to have like a nice, memorable, still happy celebration. And it's probably kind of great that everything went to shit, because it's like a funny story to tell now, right? Like,
yes, exactly.
They needed it.
They needed it. And then it's like, how about we don't go for a hike in the snow?
How about next year?
We go out and have a bottle of wine and a really nice dinner.
That's right.
Okay, here's my second one. This headline, it says, PhD in earthquakes. My time to shine. Get payback on my wife and talk about quicksand.
Cool.
And then the beginning of this just starts in all caps. Finally. I've always wanted to write in, but I am from a tiny town in Texas, Port Aransas, what's up? So I have never had a hometown, though my mom and grandma did find a dead body on the beach one time, but that's annoyingly all the details they've ever given me.
Jesus.
Oh, that must have been so scary.
Creepy.
Clearly, I didn't get my murderino genes from them. Anyway, this week, Karen told the story of the Alaska earthquake, and my time has finally come. I just finished my PhD in geoscience with a focus on earthquakes in late 2019. Congratulations.
Wow.
I actually worked on a machine that my advisor built that simulates some of the effects of faults moving. With that said, I'm going to try to not get too excited about earthquakes, but I did want to share a little. On last week's episode, you were wondering... And last week's episode is meaningless here because of the, just so everyone listening understands, these are all out of time.
Yeah.
Time is not relevant anymore on this podcast.
Time is like melting butter. It doesn't hold
it
up.
It just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
On last week's episode, you were wondering about what controls the duration of earthquakes. Consider this an anti-corrections corner email, because you are absolutely right.
Oh.
The equation to determine earthquake magnitudes includes the distance that the fault ruptures or moves. So in general, the farther the fault slips, the higher the magnitude, and the longer the earthquake. That's horrifying.
Wow. No, I don't want it.
So quick jolt, those little threes that we feel, threes and fours every once in a while down here.
Yeah.
Just a
like, uh-oh. Oh, my God.
Okay. Earthquakes have a lot of other crazy consequences that not everyone knows about. You mentioned tsunamis, which is a huge one. I actually lived on a ship in the Indian Ocean for 2 months studying rocks underneath the ocean in the same area that the 2004 Sumatra earthquake happened, magnitude 9.1.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Sumatra earthquake? But I think one of the crazier things is called liquefaction. All right. So this is the reason that I got excited about this email. I mean, I like it in general.
Yeah.
When I bought my first house, I had to sign a ton of extra paperwork because of liquefaction.
Oh, I don't know what that is. It sounds like an energy drink, but I guess not.
It does. Liquefaction zero. No sugar.
Liquefaction. Pound it.
Let's let the earthquake doctor tell us all about it.
Great.
Liquefaction has caused massive damage in New Zealand after earthquakes. When the ground shakes for a long time, soil gets compressed and water pressure increases underground. Mm. This increase in water pressure underground can cause the ground and soil to appear to almost flow, much like quicksand. In New Zealand and other places, this has been severe enough to essentially sink cars partially into the ground. Earthquakes have so many different consequences and are really scary for people living on or near fault lines. The other issue is that they are almost impossible to predict. Anyway, I could go on forever, but I really just wanted to write in because I finally had a reason. Also, my wife and I live in Houston, and she went to a live show here before I moved down and talks about it all the time.
Huh.
Oh, those Houston shows. Man.
Yep.
Man, Texas shows up.
Texas knows how to party because they pound liquefaction before every show. I'm on this tip now.
Yeah, liquefaction. It's all that I was basically told. I lived close enough to the LA River that if there's a high enough earthquake, my entire house could fall into the ground. Like, I was basically, it was sinkhole potential.
Oh my God. And you were not that close to the LA River. Like, that, you were not
really
close. Oh my God.
So if this email makes it onto the next episode, I'll finally have beaten her in cool MFM experiences.
Love it. That's what we're here for.
We love y'all. We've been OG listeners. Thanks for always being vocal about mental health and the crazy-ass world we're living in right now. SSDGM, Abby, she, her.
Yes, Abby, you won. What's up?
Abby, you win.
You win, hey. You win a case of liquefaction. Fuck, I can't get off of it. I think it's the funniest name I've ever heard in my life.
It sounds so dramatic that, truly, the year after I bought that house, I was like, everyone that I knew that had also bought a house, I was like, hey, did you have a liquefaction thing that you had to, like,
sure it was going to happen at that point, because it sounds so insane.
If they warn you about it, you have to sign paperwork about it.
But I've never heard of it. That's terrifying. This one is called My Grandma and the Mob Parade. And it just starts, Alejandra, I am definitely willing to bribe you, so let me know if you're open to negotiations. Alejandra,
guess,
of course.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Picks her hometowns, and clearly she is open to it. When my grandma was 4 years old, there was a parade in town. Her father thought it would be fun for her to ride in the parade, so he just handed her up to a guy who let her ride in his lap. Fun story, right?
No.
Except this was 1946 in Detroit, Michigan. The parade was the auto industry's golden jubilee, and the man holding my tiny grandma was none other than Jimmy Hoffa. Oh. Who are you? John Wayne Gacy.
John Wayne Gacy. Teenage John Wayne Gacy.
For any listeners who don't know, Jimmy Hoffa was the notorious leader of the Teamsters Labor Union and is known for his criminal activity and mob connections. My great-grandfather was a union rep for the Detroit auto workers at the time, and he met Hoffa through the union. Hoffa became the local union president not long after the parade and went on to be the vice president of the Teamsters in 1952. He was eventually convicted of jury tampering, bribery, conspiracy, mail fraud, and wire fraud. After getting out of jail, he mysteriously disappeared. Of course, we all know about Hoffa's grave not being found. It is widely believed that he was murdered in a mafia hit, but his body was never found. So that's the story of how my four-year-old grandma rode in a parade on the lap of a notorious mobster. Grandma claims she has a photo of it somewhere, but I've yet to see it. I discovered your podcast about a year ago and have since binged every episode. All I can say is thank you for being you.
Oh.
Stay sexy and don't give your children to mobsters, Kate.
Imagine
yeah.
a modern-day parent
yep.
handing their toddler
yep.
up to a fully grown man on a parade float and being yep. like, meet you later.
Yep, I'll see you at the end of the parade, or I'll just meet you at the local bar when this is over. Bring my kid.
Yeah. It's just
so absurd. And then in addition, it's a fucking mob boss, essentially, that you're handing your kid to.
Well, I mean, you know, the mob eventually became...
Yeah, let's lay more off.
Like a power player. Yeah, I'm here to argue for Jimmy Hoffa.
That's right.
The subject line of this email is, yes, Jeff from a she chef. Hello, food arenas.
Yes,
so much chef. Going on all at once. I squealed with joy when I heard you wanted to hear from chefs. I always felt like I never had anything good to write in about. No hometown murder, no family scandal. I'm just a basic boring bitch, really. Except for this one thing of being a chef. I have so many stories from cooking in restaurants from NYC to SF. Even a small 3-month stage in the middle of nowhere, France. Because they said... Even a small 3-month stage. And then in parentheses, it says pronounced stage, S-A-S-T-A-J. So it's stag?
Stag. Stag.
Stag.
Stag.
Because that J is not a G, right? Stag must be meaningful in some way.
Yeah.
Thanks for the pronunciation and no explanation of an American word with a Dutch pronunciation. Okay, anyway, I'm not mad. My favorite memories were at a restaurant in Midtown Manhattan some 10 years ago, working for a celebrity she chef. She was and is a badass who would yell things like, plate fucking faster, or I don't care if you get burned, put your fucking finger in it to check if the food is hot.
Oh.
All in an open kitchen in front of all the diners.
Yes.
She even kicked some diners out of the restaurant for accusing the cooks of tasting with dirty spoons. Hell yes. That's the coolest.
Oh my God.
No, I don't think this kind of behavior is okay, but she taught me everything I know, so I'm forever grateful. Just want to take a quick break here to say, it seems like for chefs, that's pretty mild behavior.
Standard and mild. Yeah.
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 Kind of high pressure situation. Okay. Yeah. One night, she said her friend, the one and only Anthony Bourdain, was coming for dinner.
Oh my God.
He was sat at the chef's table within view of the open kitchen. I was on sauté that night. It was very busy, and I was turning and burning, dripping sweat and cursing under my breath, trying to keep up. I was putting a couple of finished plates in the pass and looked up to see the silver fox himself looking at me dead in the eye with an ear-to-ear smile, waving at me with one of those long arms as if to say, you are in the shit right now and I see you. Cheer the fuck up. I didn't fully appreciate it in the moment. All I was thinking about were the next orders to get out. God, I miss that man. Oh. Ugh, for real. Several years later, I helped open a restaurant for the same chef in SF, working 16-hour days, 6 days a week. And she was being featured on Mind of a Chef and, of course, had to film opening night. Mm. The fuckers. Things were toxic and I was diagnosed with severe anxiety and depressive disorder, which I think was always there, but I just couldn't ignore it anymore. I almost left the industry altogether. After getting professional help and taking medication, I left that place. I met my husband, moved to the North Bay, got a dog, had a baby, and have been chefing for a great wine company for the past 6 years. Anyways, thanks for being fans of what chefs do. We do it for you. We are, in fact, a bunch of traumatized, emotionally handicapped masochists who live for the moment, however small, of having someone say, well done, you did a great job. Mm. I hope to cook for you all someday. Stay sexy and don't put your fucking finger in it unless you want to get burned. KT.
Oh, that was fun. That was a really fun one. Wow. Yeah, that is wild.
Was that the last one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ending on that one. Yes, Jeff. Thank you,
That's
Jeff.
Yes, Jeff.
Thanks. Thank you, Jeff.
Of course, Jeff. I'd love to hear more stories like that. That idea of, especially in fancy restaurants, when rich people try to accuse people of things.
Yeah.
I mean, how satisfying is that? Where it's like, get the fuck out.
You know what I was reading last night? I secretly follow Kitchen Confidential on Reddit. There's like a Reddit thread of just back of house stories. And one of the questions was, have you ever had to come out from back of house to defend front of house and kick out a customer or whatever it is to defend them? And there are some great stories in there. So maybe we can get people to write those in as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, have you ever, you know, waiting tables and like having to grab the fucking dishwasher and been like, can you come stand up for me because this customer is being an asshole?
Yeah.
I want those stories.
Yeah. That would be really exciting.
Yeah.
Any like work drama stories.
Totally.
That it's all good. It's all a good story.
Life stories, really. At myfavoritemurder@gmail.com.
Tell us about your life.
Tell us about everything.
But stay sexy.
And don't get murdered. Goodbye.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Our senior producer is Hannah Kyle Crichton.
Our producer is Alejandra Keck.
This episode was engineered and mixed by Stephen Ray Morris.
Our researchers are Marin McClashen and Gemma Harris.
Email your hometowns and fucking hoorays to myfavoritemurder@gmail.com.
Follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at myfavoritemurder and Twitter at myfavemurder.
Goodbye.
Follow My Favorite Murder on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you don't miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
Visit exactlyrightstore.com to purchase My Favorite Murder merch.